Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. As always, I'm your host, Roy Richards. You know, for the past several weeks, we've talked about midlife relationships with your spouse, with your boss at work, with teenage sons and daughters, with aging parents. Today, we're going to look at two totally different relationships that most of us at middle age have just entered into or soon will enter into as our children grow and things change in our lives. The first relationship is as grandparents, as our sons and daughters grow up and have children of their own. And the second relationship is as in-laws, as your children marry and introduce you to a new son-in-law or a daughter-in-law. And you know, unlike other relationships, grandparent and in-law relationships are what I'd call artificial, meaning that you and your spouse did not directly choose these individuals to enter into your life. Of course, you love your grandkids, especially when they're cuddly little babies or small toddlers, but it wasn't your choice when to give birth, how many to have, and just how to raise them. Well, hopefully, you also love or at least respect the person that your son or daughter chose to marry, but since you did not choose them, there's no obvious reason why it's a good fit with you. Another unique aspect of these two types of relationships: your own son and daughter are directly involved, so they're not one-on-one. In fact, your own son or daughter is the one that's granting you access to his or her spouse or children. So it's not like most relationships where it's just between you and the other person. And disciplining the grandkids, of course, is not primarily your responsibility. And in the case of a grandkids, a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law also must be included and consulted, which therefore increases the chance for hurt, misunderstanding, or friction. Obviously, as grandparents, we don't want to interfere in the parents' desires and wishes in raising their own children, either our own sons and daughters or our in-laws. Well, our two guests today will tell us as grandparents and in-laws how to stay out of trouble and to build wonderful, loving relationships, both with your grandchildren and with your son-in-law or daughter-in-law. But before we get into the first guest, I'd like to mention that I am available to you as a speaker on a variety of topics, and I would love to speak to your group or your company employees about midlife renewal. I am well qualified to speak on two general topics. There's, of course, my Wake Up to Life theme, which is a roadmap for individual renewal at middle age. This would be great for any organization or social group or company with lots of folks that are approaching or are entrenched in middle age. Also, there's my business leadership theme, a keynote speech to revitalize employees bottom to top, concentrating on your men and women of middle age. You know, it is possible to recharge individual lives in your company and careers and to recharge an entire company or an organization as you all work toward common goals and revitalize the entire organization together. And I can present an inspirational keynote address at your meeting, or I can conduct a full half-day or full-day seminar with audience participation, and I would love to speak to your company or your organization. My consistent message, of course, is that it's time to quit sleepwalking through life and to wake up to a second half of life and career that all of us deserve at middle age, and that's a positive life moving forward with energy, with joy, and with adventure. You can contact me by email at roy@middleagerenewal.com. That's roy@middleagerenewal.com, or you can call me directly at 515-221-9902. I would love to speak to your organization. You, of course, can also visit my website and review my two books, the personal book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, A Comprehensive Roadmap to Revitalize Your Life and Wake Up to the Life That You Deserve. And then there's Wake Up, Captain and Crew, my business leadership book on recreating and re-energizing lagging enterprises and participants midstream. And at my website, you can also obtain a free gift, my Middle Age Renewal Training mini course. That website, again, is www.middleagerenewal.com. Now let's get on with the program. Well, in our first segment today, we're going to talk about a subject in which I have no personal knowledge, how to be an effective grandparent and have a positive influence on your grandchildren. So my wife and I have no grandchildren and no immediate prospects, but I'm the exception rather than the rule, because at middle age, most of us face two sets of grandparenting issues. As parents with parents, we want to involve our own parents and in-laws in helping guide our children, but we don't want them intruding or undercutting our attempts to raise our own children in the way we think we should. And also, as our kids grow older, grandparents were constantly around when they were cuddly little babies or two-year-olds, but once they grow up to be 11, 12, teenagers, that kind of thing, it's maybe tougher to get grandparents involved, and it's harder. And also, we've talked to you as grandparents ourselves, because in our late 40s and 50s, our children begin to start their own families, and we want to watch our grandchildren grow and express our love and serve as an asset in helping to guide them without intruding on our children's parental duties. So grandparenting, as you probably know, is becoming tougher and tougher. As our guest today puts it, today's new technology and the decline in extended family living have left many grandparents on the outside looking in. Of course, there's frequently geographic separation way across the country sometimes, or even across the world, and kids with their constantly on their cell phones and playing their video games and texting and doing those things don't have too much time for grandma and grandpa. And of course, grandparents themselves are often busy on Facebook or Twitter when they're not off on a cruise somewhere. But kids still need but have fewer face-to-face contacts with adult role models, and that's why grandparenting is, in today's hectic society, our grandkids need us more than ever. And, you know, today's program is not just for grandparents, because all of us in our late 40s, 50s, and 60s need to understand and relate to and communicate with today's youth, be our own grandkids if we have them, our nephew or niece's children, as volunteers if we, are in junior achievement, Boy Scouts, Little League, whatever that may be, and just the neighborhood kids we need to relate to the younger generation. Whether or not a child is related to us or not, it's up to each of us to set a positive example for succeeding generations. And our guest, Dr. Trevor Campbell, is here to help. Dr. Campbell has practiced medicine for over 30 years, and he's been inspired by the widening gap that he has observed between his teenage patients and his older patients. And he's spent decades uncovering the new and challenging role of grandparents, and he's co-author with educator Shirley Bell of a new book, The Grandparents' Handbook, How to Connect with Your Grandkids. Hello, Dr. Campbell, and welcome.
Good morning, Roy.
Well, first let's talk with the grandparents. Later we'll get into parents and dealing with their own parents and that issue. But as a grandparent who wants to be an important resource for my grandkids, how do I break in? You know, I was fairly comfortable when my grandchild was 2 years old and I was playing peekaboo with them, and when they were five and we were running around playing little games and puzzles and stuff like that. But now that they're getting older, 10, 12 years old, or even a teenager, it's much tougher to relate to them. How do I open communication with an older grandchild like that?
Well, it's always more difficult to open communication if there hasn't been good communication. But
yes,
if there's been reasonable communication in childhood, one maintains the interest and the connection by giving the grandchild or grandchildren a sense of context. And this is one of the most important roles a grandparent can have. And by context, I mean a sense of the bigger picture. Roy, we live in a world where the one-liner has replaced the joke because nobody's got any time, and the a few sound bites now make a speech.
Yeah.
So in this fragmented world where we've got an overflow of information, we have problems making sense of all the information. And what grandparents can do with their sense of history of the family, having been around the block a few times and so forth, is to give a grandchild an idea of where they fit in the bigger picture. And this is very, very important, because even though we have all the social media, we're seeing more and more isolation among young people.
Yes, we do.
So my feeling is the best way to keep the connection is by storytelling. In Africa, where I'm from, we have a saying that it takes a village to bring up a child.
Yeah.
And I think what is meant by that is the family unit is the testing ground for one's movement into society. In a family, we learn that there's disputes, there's disagreements, and so on, but that they can be solved.
That's a very interesting way of putting it, that the family is a testing ground for that. I'd never thought of that, but it's so true that is an excellent testing ground for children as they grow and develop. How well their family relationships are is how well their relationships will be in business and social situations and whatever in the community when they grow up.
Absolutely correct. And then the other role of the grandparents is a supportive role. I always say that the parents, unless in exceptional circumstances, mental illness, addiction, and so forth, are the main act in child rearing. But the grandparents get to be the support act, which is actually more of a fun role.
Yes, it is, because you can always go home and leave the mess.
Exactly. And the other thing that I like to say, you know, thinking on my own childhood, when I was younger, my parents' relationship, which was always good with me, it was more of an executive, now you need to do this and don't please do that, and yes, you did that well and we're proud of you. But my grandparents had more the philosophical role.
Yes.
You know, we always say that science tells us what we can do, but philosophy tells us maybe what we should do. So they have this more reflective, they're not into the crisis management, they're not putting out fires in the development of the child and later teenager. So the grandparents are a safety net as well, Roy, because if communication were to break down or there was hostility between parent and child, they can always salvage that.
Yeah, you know, there were two things in the introduction to your book that I really paid a lot of attention to and thought a lot about. And one is that you need to remember that your grandchildren are people. They're human beings just like adults are, and you don't want to talk down to them, especially as they grow up and into their teenage years. And also the other point you make is that, and this is certainly true today, that we grandparents can learn a lot from the youth of today. That's certainly true regarding the iPhone and the communication and texting and Facebook and all this kind of stuff that goes on. But, you know, if you really sit back and listen to your teenager or your grandchild rather than just telling them how it should be, I think you gain a lot both ways.
And I mean, who hasn't had the experience if they had grandparents where they were maybe upset about something at home, some restriction that was placed on them, and they were a bit long-faced, they would speak to one of their grandparents, or their grandparents would approach them and say, "You don't look very happy," and then perhaps the story comes out. And I remember my grandparents being reassuring and even chuckling and saying, you know, part of youth's role, it seems to be, is to, you know, they end up irritating older people. And that this is a snapshot of your life, this little unhappy period. It's not the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it's normal. And your parents, you're just like your dad, because I remember him being cross with me when I said much the same.
Yeah, that's great when you relate a story like that from the dad's or your son's and your grandson's father's period, so that they can relate to that and see they're not alone.
Absolutely, because the psychologists will tell you that in a happy childhood, I'm not talking about the teenage years so much as, you know, junior school and so forth, is for the child to learn basic trust. And that is basically that they don't run at a high anxiety level. No matter what happens, there will probably be a solution.
Yeah.
And I think the grandparents here are a second layer, a safety net.
Yes.
And
yes,
that's very reassuring for those that are lucky to have grandparents who remain involved or live close by.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a very important role. The other thing, of course, that we have to remember, it is grandparents who are the most interested with passing on of values, because they sense they've had most of their life, whatever age they are.
Yeah.
And they have struggled, for the most part, to defend their values, practice what they preach, and sometimes that's very difficult. So why would you not want to have this role of passing on those values, which have been so difficult sometimes to keep as we navigate through life?
You must understand what your own values are, and then hopefully you respect your own values and you really want to pass them on to generations behind you.
And, you know, the effect, Roy, isn't always immediate. I mean, sometimes they might give you that whatever look.
Yeah.
But that same child doesn't forget.
The famous teenager forever look.
Yeah. You know, 10 years later, they have a totally different take on it.
Yeah.
And then 10 years after that, they tell everybody how important it was.
Yeah, that's true. I know I can still recall some instances where my wonderful grandfather, who was a Methodist minister, happened to be, but just the way he related to people and related to me and my sister, and what a wonderful grandfather he is, and I'll always remember that. But, you know, I may not have realized it so much at the time, but in hindsight, I certainly do.
Yeah.
Well, what are some things a grandparent should never say to your grandchild? I know there are ways that grandma and grandpa can really turn a child off. What are some of those things that we shouldn't say?
I would broadly categorize that in the field of negativity without an explanation. Obviously, the world's a good and bad place. We can find a lot wrong with it. We can find a lot good with it. It's kind of a balance often. But if one were to say, I'm glad I'm not a young person now, because it's just things are getting worse and worse, or things were so much better in my day.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
The message to the child is that it's not a great situation. And maybe
turns the child off and says, well,
exactly,
my grandfather's out of touch. He doesn't know what he's talking about anyway, and things aren't like that anymore.
But if you can relate it to a story where there's some kind of insight attached, say, well, look, this has gone down in my opinion, but this is why I think so. But on the other hand, this could be a development. You leave it more open-ended so that the child learns that you're at least open to.
Yeah, you could open a debate. Like I could say to my child, you know, I can't stand that rap music. I don't know how you kids of the day can listen to garbage like that. It's not even music. But then, you know, he said, well, your kid may say, the kind of music you listen to isn't so great either. And you could have a debate as long as you respect each other and don't just pass judgment.
Exactly. So there's a few things. And, you know, grandparents, no one's suggesting grandparents sell out and say something, when no one's suggesting that. But I think there's a difference between judgment and discernment.
Yes.
We differentiate it in the book as judgments or discernment as opposed to judgmentalism.
Yes.
Where the kind of pronouncement is there with the actual sentence, if you like. And there is quite a big difference between the judgmentalism is an assumption that you know exactly what should have been done under the circumstances without necessarily knowing all the facts.
Yeah, without even having a good reason why you have this knowledge other than you're older.
Yes. But sound judgment, on the other hand, is what is now called a teachable moment, where having heard all the facts, we can shed light rather than heat on the situation.
Yeah, amen.
You know, and then if you can link it to a story of someone that doesn't have to be in the family, it could have been a neighbor that you lived next door 40 years ago.
Yeah.
They had this happen, and that was the way they handled it. That makes it more compelling.
Oh, and yes, definitely.
It takes the heat out of the situation.
Well, here's a dilemma that grandparents sometimes face. Say that I finally, you know, I've gotten good communication with my teenage grandchild, son or daughter, and that child tells me in confidence something that they haven't told their parents, and I'm strongly convinced that, you know, it's something that their parents should know about. Maybe they said their boyfriend drove and when he was drinking the other night and almost had an accident, or they tell me that some of their best friends are on drugs or whatever, and the last thing I want to do is betray the trust, because if I run to the parent and tell them about it, the kid will probably never talk to me again. What would you suggest I do in that situation?
Well, you know, there are circumstances where it's really very serious. And,
yes.
You know, and safety issues and stuff like that. You say, well, you know, now that you've given me this, it's not the type of thing I can sit on.
Yeah, but no, you'd have to tell your child that in advance before you just run rat to the parents.
Yes, you need to have a good talk with them and say, look, this maybe what you're telling me now is not a safety issue, it's not the end of the world, but I think that this, if it drags on, can become a huge problem. I would like you to seriously think about letting me approach one of your parents, or I'll be happy to come with you if you
want. Yeah, that's a great idea. Come with you, and we'll talk
yes.
about it together.
Yes, because sometimes they fear a reaction that really won't happen. You know, with a good parent, there might be disappointments and so forth, but there won't be abandonment.
No.
And just saying that I'm there as a sort of, not an advocate, but like, we're bringing this problem to the table.
Yeah.
So it's not letting them off the hook, but it's sort of supporting them to disclose. If you know, and that's a grandparent's judgment as well. It's basically a position of trust. Say, look, you've asked me not to tell someone. I think it's important that you've told me, but now, this is an issue where I'm obviously, because I care and I know the seriousness, I'm going to run at a level of high anxiety, and I'm asking for your permission for us to go to the parents.
Yeah, that's definitely, I would agree 100% that would be the way to handle it, to have a discussion and trust alone with the grandchild first before you even consider going on. But, you know, you'd have to be fairly insistent that you really feel like you must tell the parents about this, because it's not something that for your the child's own welfare that you think we should ignore. But
really,
it's
the thing is that if they've told a grandparent something that's I would call heavy, for want of a better word, then they already trust that grandparent.
Yeah.
They're not expecting rejection from that grandparent.
No.
And for some people, it's almost a stepping stone to making that leap.
Yeah.
You know, it's a prelude to actually making that leap to tell their parents.
Yes, that's probably true.
But there'll always be these tough nuts to crack. I mean, you know, just in the kind of counseling practice I do, I mean, there are situations that are really thorny and difficult. So it's like anything in life. One can have a policy, but then you still get the curved ball, and, you know, then it's a judgment call. There's always, of course, professional advice. You know,
yeah.
One could see someone about this and can get guided by a professional. I mean, that's...
Well, here's one on the other side. As a parent with, I want to have my parents involved and as grandparents, but what do I do as a parent if my father or mother or together buy something for my child that I don't want them to have? Say I have a 10-year-old and they buy a motorized trail bike that I think is the last thing in the world I want my son or daughter to do. How do I intervene in that? And you say they've already bought it and presented it to the kid. What do I do then so that I don't look like the heavy? And
again, a tough one. I think it comes down mainly to communication. Like, you know, if I mean, hopefully the parents, the grandparents have good knowledge of their own child who's the parent.
Yeah.
And realize that they're nervous about this sort of thing, or with good cause they're worried about something else. Then I think if it comes down to an issue where the parent is going to run around with a lot of anxiety, they have to try and say, well, can you swap this for a voucher or something? And
that's
have that formal conversation, like, look, it's wonderful that you buy the grandkids things and we appreciate it, but can we just talk about it? It'll still be a surprise for them.
Yeah.
It's not that one wants to be a control freak, but I mean, like you say, certain things can be a bit extreme or, you know, not be the soundest judgment, but that all comes down to communication.
Yeah. How do I say my grandparents paid a lot of attention to my kids when they were small, but now that they're growing older and my grandparents are getting more and more active and, you know, going on cruises all the time and they're always out on the golf course or socializing with their friends, how can I encourage them as a parent to get them more involved positively in my children's lives?
Well, again, one can, you know, sit down, have the conversation, throw it around a bit, but generally the best way is to start some kind of thing which can become a tradition. I've had patients who, once a month, they have a lunch on a weekend or, you know, a supper once every 2 months. And a very strange thing happens usually. The children, the grandchildren, if they're in their teens, like kind of like, I want to be here rather than that. But if they persevere and keep going, the ones who want to come will come, and eventually the others will want to join. It's really that persistence and making time. In today's world, if you don't really, for most people, if you don't make the time, it's not going to happen.
No, that's true.
And I mean, let's face it, we all like eating. So a meal type context where it's informal, you come, you go, but at least you see, you talk, you share, I think that's a great start. And it usually leads to other things.
Yeah, and even if a grandparent is far away physically and geographically, you know, in today's internet, it's possible if they want to, they can communicate and have a good internet relationship with their children. And I would strongly encourage grandparents to do that if they're not close by to the...
Yes.
Well, tell people how they can find your book. It sounds like a really good resource for a grandparent, new or otherwise. And I know you have a lot of stories in there and practical advice and examples, which I always love books that have a lot of stories in them rather than just a bunch of theory. How can somebody obtain your book? That's The Grandparent's Handbook.
Yes, by Shirley Bell and Trevor Campbell. It's available on Amazon.com as a hard copy book, and it's also available in Kindle form.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so I would definitely, I previewed that book, and I just obviously couldn't read that much of it, but the little bit I saw, it sounds like it would be an extremely valuable resource for somebody that has grandchildren and wants to positively impact their lives without becoming too intrusive and undercutting the parents, which is obviously another issue. I know you have a chapter in there how you deal with a situation when the grandchildren are brats.
Well, we basically look at what works when communicating across the generation and generally what does not. Obviously, these are trends and there are exceptions. When people say, what's the book's about, I say, how to avoid the frustration and pain of poor communication with your grandkids.
Yeah, communication is certainly the key to just about anything in life, and certainly with the grandchildren it is. And once again, that book is called The Grandparents' Handbook by
Shirley Bell and Trevor Campbell.
Yeah, and I would certainly recommend looking at that on Amazon.com if you're a grandparent, and or even if you're not one right now, but you plan on being one in the near-term future. And thank you so much, Dr. Campbell, for joining us today. I think you've given us some valuable insights.
Thank you, Roy, for having me.
Well, in our second segment today, we're going to talk about the often difficult relationship of in-laws. And many of us in our 40s and 50s have mothers or fathers-in-law are still alive, but by now you've probably settled into a pattern with that. You either get along with them or you don't. And we talked about care and relationships with aging parents on our April 29th program, and most of the same advice applies to your spouse's aging parents. And you can listen to this at any time. So today we'll concentrate on what is or will become a new role as we progress through our 40s and 50s, and that's parents-in-law. And our guest today, Deanna Braun, Ph.D., has written a book specifically for mothers and daughters-in-law, so we'll concentrate on that. We may have a chance to talk about mother-in-law-son-in-law relationships and fathers-in-law as well, but we'll concentrate on the mother's daughters. That seems to be one of the most touchy relationships there is around. Didn't you say, I think, in the intro to the book, like 70% of the of married couples have some kind of issues with mothers-in-law, daughters-in-law? So it's pretty common. And she's also the author of the book, Reluctantly Related. I love that title. Secrets to Getting Along with Your Mother-in-Law or Daughter-in-Law. Hello, Dr. Braun, and welcome to our program.
Hi, Roy. Thank you for having me.
Well, in your book's intro, you point out that there are five good reasons why a mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationships are so challenging. And give us a couple of those reasons. I mean,
sure.
It's fairly obvious that they're not a natural type relationship.
Well, probably the first reason that comes to mind really is the fact that it's an artificial relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it's one that we're thrown together. We didn't pick this person to be friends with. They didn't pick us. And, you know, we're both there because we love this one man. And
yeah.
That is the only reason that we have now become family. And so it really starts off very artificial. And from there, we have to somehow create something. And oftentimes, we don't because of that.
Unfortunately,
you know.
It starts out artificial sometimes and goes all downhill from there.
Yes, sometimes it does, absolutely. And then another reason is that we all come to, well, all of us, not just mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law, but we come to the relationship with our own personal history and our own emotional baggage.
Yeah.
And those things really get in the way of having a relationship. Even in the best of relationship, those things can hurt the relationship. So when you come in with this artificial relationship, it really can create some...
Yeah, and especially now, you know, when we're talking to people of middle age and the young people, our sons and daughters nowadays have so much different culture and approach to everything than we did at their age.
Absolutely.
It seems like it's even harder now to relate to. Maybe it's always been. Maybe it just feels like it's harder to you know, with the vast
because it's us now.
with the internet and all this kind of stuff going on in society,
yeah.
And the technologies and everything, it really puts a chain or a strain between generations, I think, sometimes. But,
I think that's very true. I think that's very true, and particularly with the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship. You know, it's not something that it's ever really talked about. It's like we're just supposed to know how to be, and
yeah.
No one's ever told us how to be.
No. That would be a good book. Here's How to Be. Then you wouldn't have to read any other books.
That's right. That would be it.
Yeah, you know what? And you point out another problem is we each have our own way of reacting to things. The same incident that, you know, may have not been hurtful to the mother-in-law, may have been very hurtful to the daughter-in-law because of something that she said casually to the mother-in-law and didn't mean anything by it, or, you know, maybe vice versa.
Exactly. That happens all the time. And, you know, we often don't talk about that. We just then react to that person, and that could be we avoid them or we blow up at them or whatever we do. And it's like, you know, people aren't really communicating. They're just reacting to each other.
As you also point out, sometimes the smallest, most insignificant type incident can get blown up. And, you know, I can think of some things that lasted for years between my mother and my wife, although they got along fine most of the time, but little incidents that graded my wife the wrong way or my mother the wrong way hung around for months and years.
Well, and that's the other thing, Roy, that women, unlike men, in our relationships, we do take things very personally.
That's very true.
And so as a result, we do hang on to things probably longer than we should sometimes, you know, because we take things very personally.
Boy, that's sure true of my wife. She hangs on to things much longer than I do. Not that I'm always good at forgetting things, but, well, you know, to establish a strong positive bond with your daughter-in-law, it's important that you get to know her personality type. And I love in your book you describe four different personality types for daughter-in-law. I love those names, Confident Connie and Doubting Donna and Weird Wendy. And what a transition, Tracy. I think was the fourth one. But how do you determine which personality profile best fits your daughter-in-law, and what should you do about it once you find out which one does?
Well, there's a couple of ways you can figure out which daughter-in-law you're dealing with, and that is, one, you can buy the book because the quiz is in the book, but you can also go on my website, drdeannabrand.com. The quiz is on there. The questionnaire is on there, and you can just fill it out for free, and it'll instantly give you the results, and it will really go into detail describing what this person is like and what you can expect from them.
What because would one, say a Doubting Donna be like, just out of curiosity, just to pick one?
Pick one. Doubting Donna, she is one who, let's say she's got a career, and nowadays most daughters-in-law are working outside the home, you know, she comes across very confident, very self-assured. However, in her personal relationships, that's where she struggles. She really, deep down, second guesses herself. She's really uncertain about who she is and what she thinks and what she believes. She just doubts herself a lot. And so what she has a tendency of doing is she will hear things that her mother-in-law says very innocently, let's say, but she will turn it around as saying it's a criticism she's being judgmental or she's controlling. And that's really because of the way she's perceiving things based on how she feels about herself.
Yeah. So how would the mother-in-law then best build a positive relationship with Doubting Donna? I guess say anything like that if she could help it.
Well, you know, because Donna has a tendency of misperceiving things, misperceiving behaviors, the best thing for her mother-in-law to do is to really state to Donna ahead of time. Say ahead of time to Donna why you're doing something. Let's say, for example, you want to help Donna. You're at her house. She's cooking dinner. You want to help her. Well, instead of just jumping in and helping, you say to her, you say, you know, I'd really like to help you and give us a chance to get to know each other and talk more. And we haven't talked in so long. We can catch up. If you know, would it be okay if I helped you at dinner when we can talk while we're doing that?
Yeah, that's
by doing that
idea,
she knows exactly why you're asking or why you're wanting to do this. If you just jump in, she's going to hear that as or see that as you're being intrusive, you think I can't cook, you're trying to take over. So that's the difference.
Yeah, that's right. I can just picture that from years ago in our relationship. If my mother had intervened and offered or just pitched in and started to cook, my wife probably would have taken that as an insult of her own cooking or something.
Exactly. And even though that's not the mother-in-law's intent at all, that's how it can be interpreted.
Yeah, oftentimes a mother-in-law will just be trying to pitch in and help out, and the daughter-in-law will take that resentfully as, you know, trying to manage her business. And, you know, as you point out, and I know we all know that to have mother-in-law, daughter-in-law in our lives, that probably the greatest cause of tension arises when the children arrive. You know, it was over 30 years ago, but my wife still grumbles about how my mother closed the door when our newborn daughter, Kristen, when she was rocking her, up in her little bedroom, and my mother would close the door, and my wife felt she was somehow shutting her out, or I don't know why she closed the door to this day, but I know in your books, in the introduction, you have a real good example of that when you fed the little baby Lauren with Michelle, your daughter-in-law's permission.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, you think you're doing something helpful, and that's not how it's taken. And it does come up a lot when children come into the picture. I think what happens is the daughter-in-law, you know, she's being a mom, and she gets very territorial. And she's also probably uncertain about her own actions, and she feels a need to prove herself. And
yeah,
so she goes overboard.
First time new mother, you know, has.
You
know, here's a tough question for any mother-in-law and for a father-in-law for that matter. But what if the mother-in-law strongly believes that the daughter-in-law or, say, her own son is not properly nurturing or disciplining a small child? And what should she do? I mean, should she just let it pass, or how does she make a correction or make a suggestion without creating a huge blow up
tough.
In the relationship?
I think there is a fine line. I mean, if you truly think the child's being neglected in some way, that's very different. If you just feel like the parent is maybe overindulging or you know, you just totally don't agree with it, I think you have to step back. It's their child. You really can't say anything.
Yes,
even to your
son. If I observed my son shaking the baby, I certainly would intervene in that case.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Exactly.
But
that's different. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's well, let's bring the son or husband into the picture. And I have a whole section in my book, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up, of being caught in the middle. And that's from personal experience. I've been caught in the middle a lot in the past when there used to be, although, like I said, they usually got along real well, my wife and my mother. But what does a guy do if he loves his mother and his wife and you know, they're arguing, and you can't win for losing, because if you take your mother's side with your wife, you're in trouble. If you take your wife's side with your mother, you're in trouble.
Absolutely. The man is in a no-win situation in that instance. But there are things that he can do. One, he really needs to stay out of the middle. He doesn't want to get involved in that. You know, his mom and his wife need to figure this out. Now, he can help his wife to do that. He can't fix it for her, or he shouldn't fix it for her, but he can help her problem solve what she can do to make the situation better with his mom. One thing he should do in regards to his mother, though, is if his mom wants to talk about his wife, he needs to not let that happen. She shouldn't be talking to him about his wife. So,
no, definitely not.
But that happens. That happens, you know. Yeah. So, you know, that way it helps keep him out of the middle.
I know there's often in a lot of relationships, there's a lot of tension build up, say, before a holiday or before, you know, when parents are coming or you're going to the parents' house and the in-laws' house. And I think the husband or the son should definitely, if possible, have talks with the wife ahead of time about you know, some of the problems she might encounter with the mother. But that's before they arrive and before they get into it.
I think that's a great idea, absolutely. And kind of plan for how they're going to handle it, you know. And, you know, that way they're in a position where they don't have to just react. They kind of have a plan of action that they can take. It's going to make them both feel much more relaxed.
Well, I know in your book you have some personality types for the husband or son.
I do.
What's the difference between in the middle Michael and struggling Stephen? They sound
they're a little similar, but there is a difference. I mean, in the middle Michael is exactly that. He is in the middle, and he tries to fix it on both sides.
Oh, that's a
and he gets in trouble no matter what he does. He totally can't win. But Stephen, the thing with him is that he really doesn't know what to do.
Oh.
And so as a result of that, he just avoids everything.
He goes out in the yard and digs a hole like
exactly.
an ostrich.
Exactly. I mean, you know, in fact, he will even avoid going, you know, if there's a family get-together, he may avoid going to his family or make an excuse so his wife doesn't have to go, just so he can avoid dealing with the issue. So that's where they're different.
Yeah. You know that you also, in your book, you talk about personality types of mothers-in-law, and
mm-hmm.
I think the ideal, obviously, that we're trying to promote on this program is that our listeners would be a comfortable Carla or a woman of middle age who recognizes her role has become secondary. She's moved on. She's not trying to,
mm-hmm.
you know, directly interfere or be a mother to her son anymore like she was when he was at home, a teenager, and she's also developed outside interests and is confident of herself, and that would be the ideal. And then you talk
exactly.
about the mothering Margaret, who still tries to be a hands-on mom to a grown
yeah.
son with children, and that just doesn't work very well.
And sometimes that's somewhat subtle. I mean, it can look like she's let go of her son, but, you know, she still is being overly helpful. And what she ends up doing there, too, is not only does she try to mother her son, but she also tries to mother her daughter-in-law. You know,
no.
she sees her daughter-in-law as a daughter, and so she tries to kind of mother her, too, and be helpful in ways that aren't so helpful.
I'll never forget when my mother one time stuck her foot in her mouth and told my wife after our first daughter that we probably should just have one child.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was definitely
to say that, but we went on and ignored the advice and had a second child anyway. But my wife
probably wasn't a good thing for your mom to say.
No, I don't know why she would have taken that on. She didn't tell me that. She just told her that. I guess she was trying to be a good mom. But well, what about mothers and sons-in-law? I know you didn't write the book on that, but what's the best way that a mother can overcome tension there? I know you don't have that, probably that close relationship that mothers and other females do, but how does a mother-in-law best approach a son-in-law?
Well, what's kind of interesting about that relationship is that some husbands have issues, but most husbands, you know, they are okay with the mother-in-law because they don't really have a close relationship.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way, it's a comfortable relationship, but there's not this closeness. Or there's not an expectation of closeness. What ends up typically happening is the daughter still has a close relationship with
yeah.
her mother. And so the husband is kind of like okay with that, and so he lets that go. And,
yeah.
and so that allows him to have a relationship with his mother-in-law kind of through his wife, and that's just enough, you know.
Yeah, I never had the slightest bit of problem with my mother-in-law. She's been gone for a number of years, but very sweet lady. The funny thing is they always make jokes about men and their mothers-in-law, but yet that's not the problem. Like
it's not. I mean, most of them are pretty fine with it. You know, I mean, sometimes there's an issue, but rarely, you know, it's, you know, because the relationship is really between the daughter and her
yeah.
mother.
What about us poor fathers in life? What us men? How do we best establish positive ties with a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law? And or do we really need to? I mean, they don't talk about those ties near as much as the mother-in-law ties, but
No. And again, I think part of it is men have very different kind of relationships with each other and with women than women have with other women. I mean, if you think about it, men don't have to go to lunch with each other. They don't have
yeah.
to get to know each other on a personal level. That's not that important. I think for fathers-in-law with their daughters-in-law, you know, it's a matter of showing respect,
yeah.
being kind, those kinds of things, you know, being helpful
yeah.
when, you know, mostly is you want to make sure your wife is happy and you know, you're hoping your son will make sure his wife is happy, and that's kind of where that goes.
And
but
you certainly don't want to spoil the grandkids by buying things for them that the parents don't want them to have. I know that probably is a source of tension sometimes is when a father-in-law is overly generous.
It can be, and mothers-in-law can do the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
But again, it's a matter of you got to respect where the parents are coming from. Although grandparents do have certain privileges, you know, that
yeah.
Being a grandparent, you know, you get to be a little more relaxed than you were when you were a parent, you know.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting how you talk about how easy it is for a mother-in-law if she's not really confident in her relationships with her son and her daughter-in-law, that can have that fear of losing her son forever and of losing contact with the grandchildren. And we certainly don't want that to happen because...
It does happen a little too frequently, I think, sometimes. It is probably one of the biggest fears that I think mothers-in-law have overall. You know, even when they don't, when they know it's not going to happen, it is a huge fear.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's that rivalry factor between the parents of the daughter and the in-laws of the daughter.
That happens, yeah, exactly. You know, you've got her side of the family and then his side of the family, and she's obviously going to be closer to her own side of the family.
Yeah,
most of the time, anyway.
And the husband may not be fending enough for his side,
yeah,
in a
exactly.
relationship, just because, like you say, they don't notice relationships as much as the women do. But
exactly.
You know, I was so impressed with your website and some of those quizzes. You have a whole section for mothers-in-law and a section for daughters-in-law with resources and this questionnaire you talked about. Tell people a little more about your website, and also about, I know you offer some coaching and some services on there that people can access.
Well, my website is very interactive. I have, as you said, I have questionnaires so you can figure out which mother-in-law you have or which daughter-in-law you have. I also have a question and answer where you can write in questions, and I'll answer on the website. Sometimes I'll answer just personally to you because
great.
You may not want on the website, or I may feel it needs to not be on the website.
Yeah,
so, you know, you can do it either way. Because sometimes people want, you know, specific questions, and this is a way to get it answered. I also have resources on there. I also do some coaching. I do one-on-one coaching. I really try to do small, short-term things, like either, you know, four sessions or six sessions. Just let's say you have a specific problem or an ongoing problem that you need help with. I can help, whether it's the mother-in-law or the daughter-in-law, I can help either side. It doesn't matter. I also have some downloads on there where, you know, to help you learn how to talk to your in-law differently and how to handle certain situations differently. I have downloads to help each side deal with that.
Yeah, that's great. And it's really a highly unique website. And also your book is highly unique because I don't think there's many other books like that out there on the subject. And I also love the way you have real-life examples and kind of good suggestions rather than just a bunch of theory. And tell people what the name of the book is and how they can order that.
Well, the name of the book is Reluctantly Related, Secrets to Getting Along with Your Mother-in-Law or Daughter-in-Law, and you can get it really everywhere. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble's website. You can get it in their stores. You can get it in independent stores. You can really get it everywhere now.
You can also get
it on my website. So
you can get it in Kindle version also?
Absolutely. It's also on. You can also get it as an e-book through Kindle or actually any of them. Nook is available as well.
And your website is, once again, because it's a really valuable website, and you have a lot of free things on there, like you said. And
I'm going to give you an email or website address that makes it easier. ReluctantlyRelated.com will take you to the book page, and then you can go to the website there, or you can go to inlawsos.com.
Oh. You've got a lot of websites.
Yeah. Well, it's the same website. I just wanted to try different names to help it make it easier for people.
In-law,
SOS.
SOS. Yeah, that's an interesting title. So they've got a lot of choice. They can also go to Dr.
Deanna Brand.
Brand.com. That's how I got to it. But,
Well,
Dr. I certainly think that you have a lot of very, very valuable suggestions on a very unique topic, and I hope that people will take advantage of it, because at middle age, obviously, we have relationships with our grown sons and daughters, and we want to keep those strong, and we certainly want to bring the grandchildren into our lives. We don't want them to be excluded, but we don't want to be overly intrusive. On the other hand, we want to be a great help and have that relationship. And thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Brand.
My pleasure, Roy. Thank you.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.